I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of James Corbett, who lives over there and in Japan. He's a Canadian, but he's living over there. And, of course, then he's able to give us a very detached a view of what's happening financially. But I will tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that certainly we are in real trouble financially. The only way they're able to maintain our economy is to pour out almost $100 billion a month, actually $85 billion, which are used to buy mortgage bonds and treasury bonds. And the reason the Federal Reserve has to buy the treasury bonds is because people are not buying them as they have in the past. Everybody out the rest of the world realizes that the American currency is being progressively debased, and one of these days it's going to lose its value, and they don't want to be stuck with holding a lot of American dollars, like tragically so many Americans are, when the currency begins, of course, to fail. And there's no better way to destroy a nation than to debase the currency. And the Federal Reserve System, which is a private central bank controlled by the other bankers, which in my estimation are part of an organized effort to undermine the very fabric of American society. They know what they're doing. They just don't want us to know. James Corbett, thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. I was going to wish you a Happy New Year, but after a bleak introduction like that, I don't know if it seems misplaced, but I'll wish it anyway.
Go right ahead. Anyway, tell us what your thoughts are about what's going on, because there's so many exciting things going on.
There are a lot of things going on, and of course, we've been in the sort of winter break doldrums, so there hasn't been a lot of news going on in the last few weeks in terms of the markets, but I think we're going to see a lot of activity here as things start opening up once again. And of course, one of the biggest things that have hit in the last week or two is the fiscal cliff deal, which was a lot of hype and panic and madness to do with nothing, basically. It was a tempest in a teacup, and I think the best way for people to put that in perspective is a post that was put up on ZeroHedge.com that I'd like to direct people to. It's called Putting America's Tax Hike in Perspective, and it just shows the 2011 budget deficit compared to the annual tax increase from this fiscal cliff deal. So you have $1,089 billion of budget deficit from last year. That's $1.089 trillion for those keeping track at home. And the annual tax increase from this fiscal cliff deal is $62 billion. And when you actually stack those side by side, there's no comparison. The budget deficit is much, much bigger than the tax increases from this fiscal cliff deal. And yet, it still is being treated like it's the biggest deal that's ever happened in the history of America. And all of the hype and panic continues to surround this fiscal cliff deal. And of course, when you break down the fiscal cliff deal and you actually look at the numbers, you find out it was mostly pork. There's all sorts of pork in that legislation. $46 million for NASCAR to build more speedways. $199 million of tax breaks for rum makers and rum production. There's $15 million in tax breaks for Hollywood producers in there. All sorts of things for the cronies of Washington. And surprise, surprise, this is just more pork in more legislation that's designed to pinch the working class and raise payroll taxes.
And of course, certainly President Obama said he wanted to protect the middle class. He didn't, and certainly he was going to do that by raising taxes on the wealthy. And yet, of course, when you get your paycheck, you're going to find out that, of course, this is a massive tax on the middle class. They certainly took away your deduction for Social Security, and you're going to go back to 6%. You're going to pay another 6%. Your employer is going to pay 6.5%. But, of course, they're going to increase your capital gains tax. They're going to increase all sorts of other taxes on the middle class. Well, of course, the rich people, certainly they're going to find ways around it. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon, certainly is James Corbett, and we're talking about what's going on financially. And it's vitally important, ladies and gentlemen, that you understand that we're not being told the truth about much of anything. James was simply talking about the situation as it exists as far as the recent so-called fiscal cliff and how we supposedly were rescued from being plunged into anarchy. Ladies and gentlemen, we still have massive debts. We're going to have $1 trillion a year debt indefinitely, and in other words, increasing the national debt. And one of these days, of course, they're going to have to raise the interest rates because they're not going to get anybody to buy our bonds, and at that point, interest rates are going to go up across the country and plunge us into what I think is going to be a terrible, terrible recession or depression, for which the only excuse or escape will be when we go to the next war, and that's what they do. They use wars to get us out of debt. And so they destroy the currency, and then they say, well, it wasn't us that did it. It was those nasty enemies, whether it be the communists or the Nazis, or maybe we'll blame the terrorists this time. Who knows? Go right ahead, James. What are your thoughts?
Well, you're exactly right in that analysis, unfortunately. And of course, the next step after the big war is to introduce more institutions to promote world government. So exactly after World War I, we saw the institution of the League of Nations. After World War II, it was the United Nations. So after World War III, who knows what institution they'll try to force down the global public's throats. But that seems to be the pattern that's developing, and it's a very worrying one. But let's just talk a little bit more about this fiscal cliff deal and what it implies. Of course, what we're talking about is tax increases, and even though this was a relatively minor sum in the bigger scheme of things, it is still, as you say, it's going to affect 77% of American households, because it is... ends the cuts that were on payroll taxes. So pretty much all working Americans are going to be affected by this. And that is certainly something that people are going to be seeing. But as we move forward from this point, I think that the conversation is going to be more and more on tax hikes and tax increases, as Obama has already indicated that there still needs to be a new reevaluation of taxes. And right now, of course, all of the hype that is surrounding this talk is talking specifically about the upper income. We have to tax the rich. They have to pay their fair share. And right now, they're talking about the rich as $400,000 per year and up, $450,000 for a couple. Of course, that's going to move downwards during the course of the conversation, so that suddenly $200,000, $250,000 will be considered rich. And I imagine by the end of this conversation, it will be something more like $100,000 or even $75,000 a year will be considered the upper reaches of what we want to be targeting. Because this is the way...
All that thought will be right back in. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and James is simply saying that we're going to see more and more and more in taxes. Basically, we're talking about $1 trillion deficit this year. We're in the new financial year. It can be $1 trillion deficit. They know that. And the only way to do this, of course, would be to cut spending or increase taxes. They have no intention at all, certainly, of cutting spending, because of course that's how they are able to finance their world empire. That's how they're able to keep our military troops all throughout the world killing people. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are training over there in Jordan and in Turkey. Our special forces are training the terrorists over there in Syria, and they've killed about 65,000 innocent civilians and children. Why do we talk about that? Why do we talk about who is funding the civil war in Syria? It takes a lot of money to fund a civil war. Who's putting up the money? And ladies and gentlemen, we are. But of course, this is simply why we have to have so much in the way of higher taxes in America. As James is saying, you know, right now they're saying, oh, we want to tax the millionaires. Well, we want to tax everybody who's making $400,000. Well, we want to tax everybody who's making $200,000. And James is talking about how they're just going to keep talking about how we're going to have to go lower and lower and lower. And they are, ladies and gentlemen. If you really think that they really are intent upon taxing the millionaires, ask Barack Obama where he got the $35 million he just spent to buy a home for himself in Hawaii. How do you think a man who's never held a regular job got $35 million to build a home for himself, or to buy a home for himself in Hawaii? Why, Barack Obama and, of course, most of our other politicians are some of the finest politicians that money can buy. Go right ahead, James.
Well, unfortunately, you're very correct on that assessment. So exactly right. They're going to keep lowering the bar for this tax conversation and the threshold for what should be upper taxes that we're talking about. And unfortunately, I think what we're going to see in the last term of Obama here, as he has 4 more years to enact legislation and to propose legislation, and he is going to, I think, push an agenda here to do that second term presidency thing where he's going to try to build his legacy and not worry about being reelected. So I imagine we're going to see the topics broached of a VAT, a value-added tax, and of course some type of carbon tax and or cap and trade, I think, are going to be on the legislative agenda for Obama's second term, and perhaps even in this first year of his second term, because that tends to be the year in which most things get done. So I imagine we'll see this being raised over the course of the next year. And it's going to be more and more conversation about taxes and tax increases and raising revenue for the government. And as you say, ignoring the elephant in the room, which is the trillions of dollars that the government is spending each and every year on such things as maintaining a vast global empire with troops in hundreds, literally hundreds of countries around the world. It is an unsustainable system, but they're going to keep pinching and pinching and pinching and pinching the pennies and the pockets of the people out there until they can't take it anymore. And that's unfortunately the economic times we've arrived in, but it is certainly not just the United States. As I point out in the latest Forecaster editorial, this is a global phenomenon, and people around the world are starting to feel this pinch as the austerity-fueled protests, etc., heat up. So too does the tendency of governments around the world to increase taxes. And we've seen major tax increases taking place or having just taken place in Israel, in Portugal, in Japan here as well. So we're looking towards a sort of global tax increase, even as we see the central banks all around the world also engaging in this quantitative easing stimulus money printing. And as you mentioned before, the Federal Reserve, of course, is going to be easing but to the tune of $85 billion a month, $45 billion of which will be straight out bond purchases. And the Bank of Japan is increasing quantitative easing. We can look for more easing from the ECB this year. There's going to be basically a global stimulus increase this year, even perhaps even more so than last year, if that can even be believed, as we see the race to the bottom intensifying and people trying to desperately devalue their currencies.
But of course, with that, what they're doing when they devalue the currency, as they're doing it here in America, is in effect stealing the value of what the people have worked for their whole lives. And certainly they're going to get Social Security, but as time goes by, it's going to buy less and less and less. And basically, of course, what people don't understand is we have 79 million baby boomers retiring. They started retiring 2 years ago. They're going to retire over the next 20 years. We're talking suddenly about pretty close to 3 million people retiring every year. They're all going on Social Security. They're all going on Medicare. Eventually, unless we kill off the elderly, why, it's going to bankrupt the system. There's no way we can possibly afford it.
Exactly right. And that, unfortunately, is becoming more and more of a talking point. And I've seen that coming up online quite a bit recently, even in some popular websites where people are more and more talking about, well, it's a terrible thing to say, but it's true. Those baby boomers are sticking around too long and hoarding too much of the wealth so that the younger generation can't make any headway. So it would be better if a lot of baby boomers were dying. So unfortunately, this idea is being inserted into the cultural conversation right now. And of course, what do we have coming along to help along is Obamacare and the idea of these death panels, which, of course, at first they said, oh, that's conspiracy theory. Of course, there's no such thing as death panels. And then they've gradually started to admit, well, yes, we do need to ration healthcare, and we do need to have a conversation about who needs healthcare and who doesn't, and whether we should be spending money on the last years of a person's life when it could be more productively spent elsewhere. So, of course, they are starting the death panel conversation, and this is coming through because of the Obamacare, but again, now that it's reality instead of conspiracy theory, I guess it's now acceptable for people to talk about this.
And of course, I suggest if you have access to a computer, go up on your Google or search engine and type in comfort care. Comfort care is a slogan they're using now for euthanasia, and they're simply already in the process of killing many of our elderly. And if you don't have somebody who needs to protect you when you go to the hospital, why you, at least in certain hospitals, I'm not saying this is general, but in certain hospitals today, why, you're not going to live very long. And I know hospitals in my area where they're practicing comfort care, which means they give you lots of narcotics and take away your food and water, and you never guess what happens. Why, most of these people eventually die. Just as in England today, they are killing 120,000 elderly people. They're not terminal at all. They go to the hospital, and of course, they simply kill them. You say this could not be happening. Well, go over the internet, check it out, you'll find it is. And of course, America will be very close behind that. We're living in terrible, terrible times, and most people find it so difficult to believe, especially now the football season, since we're moving towards the Super Bowl. People don't like to think about the reality of what's really going on, or the genocidal programs that are being implemented throughout the world as we're systematically killing the civilian population of Syria with our tax money. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. James, one of the things that concerns me is the fact that it looks like we're going to see currency wars with many of the countries in the world competing with one another as to which one can drop the value of their currency most rapidly so that their exports, certainly their manufacturing, will be improved. What are your thoughts on that?
Unfortunately, that is one of the main trends that I can see developing for 2013, and we've already, as I say, seen the first shots fired in this currency war, I think, with the election of Shinzo Abe to the prime ministership in Japan on the back of his claims that he was going to open the spigots of the Bank of Japan and let the yen flow. And we've already seen the Japanese markets respond to that positively. The Japanese markets have raised because the Japanese yen is already starting to sink somewhat with regards to the dollar. So this is going to be the theme of the year. And again, we can already see this. This is already happening. In fact, Ambrose Evans-Pritchard of The Telegraph already had an article out talking about how this is already happening between England and Switzerland. There's already something of a currency war going on between them. And other analysts have pointed out that, for example, South America, many of the biggest South American economies, including Brazil and Chile and some of the others there, have already engaged in stimulus spending to the tune of $135 billion over the last 2 years. So they are engaged in their own race to debase. And we see this again as a trend that's going to be sweeping the globe for much of the coming year. But on the back of that, I think there's some other interesting trends that I think are developing. And at the risk of, I hope your audience isn't tired out of trends and predictions for the year ahead, but I still have a few more up my sleeve that I'd like to talk about.
You go right ahead.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. Well, including one that I think is going to be, certainly if not this year, in the coming years, this is going to be more and more part of the conversation. And it's not something that people haven't heard before, but I think it is more relevant than ever. It's the idea that the West is going to be starting to be overtaken by the developing world. And certainly, I think we can see a shift in development in terms of growth from the West to the developed world. I think there's something of a growth limit that has been reached in the West in terms of what the markets are really capable of and what's going on from here. But the developing world still has, of course, a lot of room for growth in terms of GDP, etc. And I think we're going to see that overtaking the international conversation more and more in the coming years. And I think one of the first places to look for that will be in March, when the BRICS, the Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa nations meet for their BRICS summit in Durban. And they're going to be discussing the BRICS Development Bank, which is going to be a new development bank that perhaps, or is going to try to act as an alternative to the World Bank IMF infrastructure that currently undergirds international development. And if they are able to come together with some sort of real, you know, some sort of institution with teeth in it that's able to do something, there is the possibility that we might see the developing world really starting to overtake the developed world in terms of infrastructure development and projects like that, that they themselves are financing, which would be a complete break to the paradigm that we've seen hitherto.
Well, do you think that, of course, that some of these third world countries, we call them third world countries, but they're coming up very, very rapidly, would be going to some sort of a fixed economy? In other words, they would have something behind their currency like gold and silver. I mean, certainly it looks like China is trying to accumulate as much gold as they can, and certainly because they realize, of course, if you want to be a world leader, you have to have a stable currency, and America no longer has a stable currency, and America is losing its leadership of the world. Well, before we go, we have a guest, James, but what about that? Certainly, do you think, of course, that these third world countries are thinking about forming certainly a currency, a solid currency with something behind it, a value?
There is certainly something to that idea. And as we pointed out on the show last year, absolutely, China and Russia are both stockpiling gold at very fast paces over the past year or two. And I would imagine that part of what they're doing is trying to form some sort of solid economic base for this development bank so that they will actually have something to back up this idea. So that certainly at least puts that entire development bank into perspective. And perhaps this is the basis for some sort of monetary union or some sort of way around the current dollar hegemony paradigm. So certainly I think there's something to that. And I think we should be keeping our eye on that BRICS summit in March.
All right, well, let's go to Jim, who's calling us from West Virginia. Hi, Jim. How are we doing?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful, as usual, because of you and your guest. And that's not flattery. That's the truth. You know, a lot of times people will say, oh, we need to cut spending. That will fix things. But the more I think about it, and I haven't crunched numbers, and I took a bunch of economics years ago. I mean real economics, not the junk in college. But I honestly believe that there's such a large percentage of our economy, which depends upon government spending, government employees, and government welfare, that if we cut spending, that too will tank the economy. So if we do nothing, the economy tanks. We raise taxes, the economy tanks. If we cut spending, the economy tanks. And I'm 100% convinced that food's going to become the biggest issue because the currency is tanking terribly in the third world countries, even though their official exchange rates may be something. The only thing I think inflation's going to be worse because I know that for decades the Federal Reserve has been taking supposedly worn-out Federal Reserve notes, loading them on pallets, and paying off criminals. I mean, that's pretty well.
Okay, well, let's get our guest's thoughts on that. James, certainly what Jim is saying. Look, he said basically, of course, if we cut spending, why, there's going to be less government employees, there's going to be less money out there. Basically, if we don't cut spending, we're going to have problems. If we do cut spending, well, we're going to have problems as well. And what are your thoughts on that? How would you respond to him?
I think he's exactly right, actually. I think that the economy as it's functioning now is so largely dependent on government stimulus and input that it certainly would affect the economy negatively to take that away all at once. But I think the analogy is perhaps something like that of a cancer in the body. If we can look at the government as this type of tumor that's growing and threatening to spread throughout the system, I guess we have two options. We can leave it and it will continue to grow and spread and eventually kill the patient, or we can go in and operate and take it out. And even if we go in and operate and take it out, that can be a dangerous procedure. It can be difficult on the system. It can take a long time to recover from that. But at the end of the day, if you do manage to successfully remove the cancer, then you are a healthy patient again in the long run. And I think that's perhaps the type of analogy we have to look at. If government spending is threatening to overtake the entire economy and become the economy, that is, I think, what we have to try to avoid at some point. And it's going to definitely hurt to peel away the bandages, but we're going to have to do it at some point to try to restore something of what the American economy used to be before the government intervention became what it is today.
And I think you're absolutely right. Jim, thought on that before we let you go?
Oh, that's gorgeous. The one thing I must also say...
Hold that thought, Jim. We'll be back here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We have Jim calling from West Virginia, who points out that if we don't cut government spending, we're going to have terrible economic problems. But if we do cut government spending, we're going to have terrible government problems and economic problems as well, because the government is putting out all this money, and it's the only thing keeping our economy going. We have all the government employees. We have all the government, the military employees that the government's providing money for about 150 million Americans in the form of Social Security, Medicare, welfare, Medicaid. 100 million people on Medicare and Medicaid today, according to the senator from Oklahoma City, from Oklahoma, and basically on top of that, of course, we have Social Security. So we have about 150 million Americans who are getting money from the federal government. And of course, as James Responsible is, yes, you're absolutely right. But of course, we have a cancer in America, and you can let the cancer grow and it'll kill us. You can cut the cancer out and we may die in the process, but at least you have to try. I think it's an excellent, excellent analogy. No matter what happens, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have terrible problems, and most Americans are going to certainly be lose most of what they have financially before this is over. Jim, parting thought before we let you go, because we've got a full board.
Well, that's a real good parting thought. Everybody pays attention to banking and currency and government. We need to cut all business taxes, because anything which decreases the efficiency of producing wealth is actually what destroys real wealth as opposed to currency. Thank you, too, for everything you do. God bless. Bye-bye.
God bless you, too, and thanks so much. And let's go now to Mike, who's calling us from Scotts Valley. Hi, Mike. How are we doing?
I'm doing good. How about you guys?
Doing just fine. Do you have a question or comment? Once again, let me put out our telephone number. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-2295, and Mike, go right ahead.
Yeah, I've got a question for Corbett. It has to do with, I heard you mention Syria and Assad. I'm wondering, with what I heard recently in the news of him going to release an outline of what he thinks the decent government structure there should keep go. What forces, does James understand, are at work with what's going on in Syria, and whatever statement would consist of, would reveal that he was really interested in the people's will over there. Would that reveal really where coming from as far as a elected leader?
All right, fine. Basically, Mike, what you're asking is, what about Assad? Is Assad, certainly, would he negotiate some sort of a peaceful solution? Basically, of course, when you get rid of Assad, you do the way with the stability that's been in Syria for 50 years, and I think there's going to be chaos over there. I think we'll have, certainly, the Muslim Brotherhood will take over, just exactly as we brought the Muslim Brotherhood to power in Egypt. We're bringing the Muslim Brotherhood to power, certainly in Libya. We're putting the Muslim Brotherhood in power in Tunisia. We've already installed them in Turkey and Lebanon. We've installed them in both Afghanistan and Iraq. Why should we not think that we could install the Muslim Brotherhood there in Syria? We financed it since the end of the Second World War. What are your thoughts, James?
Well, for those listeners out there who don't know, Assad apparently made a speech on Sunday in which he was, at least it's being portrayed as he was rallying the crowd to fight off the quote-unquote murderous criminals that are committing this violence. And I haven't had a chance to look deeply into that speech and what he was really talking about as opposed to the way the mainstream media is trying to frame it. But I have seen, for example, that the UN chief, Ban Ki-moon, just came out and he has said that Assad is being irresponsible, and he was really disappointed with this speech and how this is not going to contribute to any kind of end of the suffering of the Syrian people, etc. So we see how this is being framed already, and of course, once again, it is to demonize what Assad is saying. I would hesitate to make any claims about what he's really going for here until I actually look into the speech itself, however, from a less biased source. But certainly, I think that there needs to be some sort of I want to say progress on Syria this year. I mean, I know something is going to happen there, but I think for me, it's particularly difficult to see how this is going to play out. And all I know is that by the end of the year, I would be very surprised if Assad is still in power because of the immense forces that are arrayed against him through the United Nations, the Arab League, the Friends of Syria, so-called, all of these organizations that have been set up and are heavily sponsored by the U.S. and others trying to topple Assad. I just don't know exactly what way that's going to happen, but I imagine, unfortunately, it probably is.
And I think you have to understand, as James said, it's all sponsored, in large part sponsored by the United States. We're the ones who are behind this. This is not a civil war. These are professional revolutionaries we're bringing in from Libya, and we're bringing in from Egypt, and we're bringing in from Saudi Arabia. And we're financing this whole situation. So the destruction over there, 750,000 people have fled, 660,000 have died.
I'll storm cloud gathers all across the sea. Let us swear allegiance.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Mike, did you have anything else you wanted to say before we let you go?
One additional thing is what I was really hoping for is, do you think that it would be, you know, if he does make a definitive statement as far as the Assyria, you know, the construct of government that would truly represent the people, do you think that would be his way of attempting to let the world know what he's really operating on and how do you think that would be, you know, revealing to some of the forces that are at work for their own?
Do you have any comment on that, James?
Well, to be honest, I'm not sure exactly what kind of a statement Assad could make along those lines, any more than someone like Obama could make a statement saying why he deserves to be the leader of the United States. I mean, it is just a question of he is the appointed president of the country. So I'm not sure exactly what kind of statement he can make other than that he, as he's already said, this is a foreign funded opposition that's attempting to destabilize the country itself. So
I think what we are trying to do is create total chaos over there, Mike, and there's nothing Assad can do about it. Assad's going to fall. We're going to install the Muslim Brotherhood. The people are going to be crushed. The Christians are going to be slaughtered. And that's exactly what the American foreign policy is all about. After all, the country after country after country, we've toppled the government in so they drive out the Christians and slaughter them. We did that in Afghanistan. There are no Christians, to my knowledge, in Afghanistan. They used to have 10% Christians in Iraq, about 1% now, and they're trying to get out. 10% Coptic Christians in Egypt, most of them have fled. They fled to Syria, and they're being slaughtered over there. American foreign policy, American tax dollars at work. And you want to know what Assad is going to do? Assad was an ophthalmologist. He was practicing in London. He didn't want to come back, but of course, when his father died, why? Because he was recruited to come back again. I'm sure he probably regrets he ever came back.
Uh-huh. Thank you for the response.
God bless. Thank you so very much. And let's certainly go to, we have Joseph calling from Augusta, Georgia. Hi, Joseph. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, about you.
Oh, well, as well as could be expected under the dire circumstances. Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
I got just a short comment first and a question. It's like, well, when things really hit the fan, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people who think they're on the A list that finds out they're on the poop list with everybody else. And then, do you think the government would pull a false flag attack like they got a missile I heard that can emit EMP?
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. Hold the thought, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. We have Joseph calling from Augusta. I'm going to ask Joseph to hang on for just a moment. Once again, I put out that our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. You have a question or comment? Our guest is James Corbett. And before we go on, James, I want you to tell our listeners, number one, how they could subscribe to the International Forecaster, and then how they can get your writings as well. Go right ahead.
All right. Well, thank you. Of course, people can get the International Forecaster at the International Forecaster's website. That's theinternationalforecaster.com, theinternationalforecaster.com. And you can go and you can sample some of the articles and editorials there. And you can also sign up for a free introductory copy of the Forecaster. And you can also subscribe for a yearly fee sum. And you can either do that by through the website, or you can write in to P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida, 33883. That's P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida, 33883, and you can get all the details that way as well. And of course, people who are interested in my own work can go to CorbettReport.com. That's CorbettReport.com, where I have articles, interviews, videos, podcasts, and other reports from the last 6 years, and they're all available for free download, so I hope people will make use of that resource.
All right, fine. Now, Joseph, once again, Joseph is calling us from Augusta, Georgia. Would you ask your question once more time?
Yeah, well, you got my comment. So the question was, do you think that they would pull a false flag attack, like, say, the EMP, they got EMP missiles instead of blowing up a bomb, and then blame it on, like, say, Iran, but then use it as an excuse to cause where they wanted to have a, like a collapse of the dollar, not all the way, and then to pull some military actions and, you know, would interrupt the communications and then pull economic and military stuff.
Okay, fine. So let's just ask James Corbett. James, do you think that the powers that be in America might produce another false flag attack? I think there's no question at all that what happened in Waco was a false flag attack. What happened in Oklahoma City was a false flag attack. What happened at, certainly at the World Trade Center was a false flag attack. And all you need to do is watch Building Number 7 come down. Watch it carefully as the center of the building collapses. How could the center of the building collapse? Why, that's what you do with, Sydney, a controlled demolition. Then the base of the building collapses, and that building never hit by a plane. It just collapses, the first time in all history. Why a building went down like that, simply without being, just because of a fire. And ladies and gentlemen, certainly the fire is not hot enough to melt the steel. But basically, of course, the question is, James, do you think that they would precipitate another false flag attack of some sort, perhaps an EMP attack?
Unfortunately, this is an extremely likely situation, and as the caller points out, it would almost certainly be tied into a tanking of the economy, and that would of course lead into a broader war, and all of this goes together, and that's why a false flag attack would be so effective for wrapping all of that up in a nice bow for the globalists who want to further this agenda. So we do have to look for, out for something like that, and of course the caller mentions an EMP type attack that would take out electronic systems across the country. That could certainly be one form. You could have a drone hack is one that I've been seeing as a possibility, some type of drone hacking event that could be blamed on Iran in order to start a war. Of course, there's always the possibility of something happening in the Strait of Hormuz, as some sort of naval false flag attack. Unfortunately, there are a lot of different vectors that are possible, but I think it would certainly be tied into the tanking of the economy. And of course, they could blame it on the sudden shooting up of oil prices that would take place in the event of any attack on Iran. They could say, look, that's the problem. And of course, that would be an excuse for them not only to start military actions, but as the caller says, to take greater reins over the control of the economy of the world, or the country at the very least. So absolutely, I think that's something we have to be on the lookout for, and that's why I think it's so important to inform other people about false flag terrorism, what that is, and how it works, so that people can be inoculated against it, and when they see some sort of spectacular event that's suddenly being blamed on Iran, they might step back for a moment and question the sources of the information they're receiving.
And I would simply point out that certainly the government has refused to release the videotapes that were taken at the Oklahoma City bombing. They refused to release all the videotapes that were taken to the buildings there, the Twin Towers, basically. Of course, they had video cameras every place there. What happened to that? You may crash, you know, and crush the floors, but unless there was explosions in those buildings, the videotapes should be intact. And of course, at Sandy Hook Elementary School, there are all sorts of videotapes that were taken there. They know exactly what happened. But of course, we never been allowed to see those, and we probably never will. We have to accept what we're told. Well, right now, anything else you want to say, Joseph, before we let you go?
Yeah, and on 911, I remember, the people piece things together later on, you know, how buildings come down, you know, and stuff like that. But right when it happened in real time, I didn't say nothing to nobody, but when they showed the Pennsylvania crash site, well, I said, that's not a plane crash.
I don't want to get off on. I think you're absolutely right, but I don't want to get off on that subject. That'll be for an open lines program.
The Sandy Hook thing in real news reports first was handguns, and they mentioned the rifle. Oh. Then it come out later. Oh, he used the rifle. That's just what I heard on. You know the supposed.
Okay, James, we really want to, Joseph, we really want to stick on finances. We'll talk about that sometime on an open line program. I agree with you, though. Thanks very much. And our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-295. And there are lots of fascinating things out there, but I mean, it's just Mr. Corbett is with us, and his expertise is in the field of economics. Jerry from Spokane, do you have a question or comment for our guest? Well, I guess we lost Jerry. I don't know what happened to him. Well, Jerry, are you there? I guess we lost Jerry, and I'll ask Jerry to give us a call back, or our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment about Sidney James, as we know, they're telling us, you know, that the stock market's going up. And everybody says, gee, maybe we're just on the brink of something really good taking place. The stock market knows what's going to happen, so maybe first things are going to get a lot better. What are your thoughts, Sidney? We see the stock market going up, and is this a real recovery? Are we really going into a bull market, or is this simply all manipulation?
To be honest, I think that there is the possibility that we will see an overall increase in the markets over the course of the next year because of the stimulus that's taking place right now. And we've seen basically the markets becoming more and more detached from economic reality the more that government intervenes with all this stimulus. So there is a possibility that, in fact, markets will be trending upwards this year. But I don't think that will be any indication of underlying economic growth or economic activity. All that will be reflecting is the fact that there is so much money being poured into the markets, either directly or indirectly, through, for example, buying this mortgage-backed securities, which props up this sort of housing recovery that we've had over the past year or two, which in turn stimulates other economic activity. So I think that there may be, in fact, some growth in the markets this year, but I think it's going to be very much fictitious growth. And I think the best example of that type of fictitious growth is in the tech sector, where, for example, over the course of the last year, we saw the Facebook IPO fiasco debacle that shows that, of course, people were just following the hype instead of following what the underlying fundamentals of Facebook was. We saw the Apple stock running up to absolute record levels, the biggest company in the world, before coming back down. And I imagine that's only going to continue trending down as Apple continues to disappoint with its newer product lines. And I think that there's going to be probably some other tech bubble stories of the coming year, including the possibility Reddit.com, which is a huge website, hundreds of millions of users, is going to be floating the idea that they might be actually starting a flotation this year. So we'll see what happens specifically. But I think that's a good example of this type of fictitious hype and panic that surrounds the markets that can create lots of wealth for people if they know how to play that game correctly. But again, it's not something I necessarily recommend because it is so much based on fiction rather than on fact.
And I think you've got to be awfully clever if you're doing it. And basically, if you don't know what's going to happen, you're just taking a gamble, and you might make something. But chances are you could also lose a great deal as well. Right now, let's go to Jerry. He's calling us from Spokane. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, I'm almost 84. I've been in the market many times, and believe me, time and time and time again, I've made the wrong choice. So basically, unless you're awfully smart, you're probably better off not to do it unless you've got somebody who can really advise you. But the average individual just doesn't have the knowledge or the ability to play a market which is totally manipulated. If you know what's going to happen, if you've got inside information, fine. But, of course, if you use that inside information, they'll put you in prison. Let's go to Jerry calling from Spokane. Hi, Jerry. How are we doing?
I'm doing fine, Stan. I have a question for Mr. Corbett.
You go right ahead.
Okay. In the late December issue of the International Forecaster, Bob Rainier wrote an article about repos and reverse repos and how agencies are turning to them to make money. Can you expand on them, and specifically, how do they make money on an overnight instrument?
Okay, repos, reverse repos, and overnight instruments. Would you just explain that in 30 words or less? No, I'm just joking.
I would love to be able to, but in fact, I honestly don't know at all about that, so I can't really comment on that in any sort of intelligent manner. So I'll do my homework and maybe have something for you next week.
I'm sorry, Jerry, but I think that's exactly the way I feel as well. Like the unidentifiable source that declined to be quoted but said off the record he had no comment. Anything else, Jerry?
Okay, well, I hope he researches that and gets back to us.
All right, fine. And all these terms, I mean, certainly they're so complicated you almost have to have a degree in terminology.
They really are, but I just couldn't understand how these agencies make so much money overnight.
Well, we'll ask it, James, to tell us next week, okay?
Okay, real good.
God bless. Thanks so much for calling. And our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And we have Nick calling from the Tri-Cities up in the great state of Washington. Go right ahead.
Yes, I have a question for our guest here. If a country was deep in debt and to get out of debt, they decided to declare bankruptcy and default on all their loans, how would that affect our world economy, and would it be a domino effect?
Oh, you're talking about if our government did that or if a corporation did that?
A government.
If our government did that, what would happen, Sydney, if our government simply defaulted on its loans? Argentina did that, about 10 years or so ago, and they just said, we've got all these bonds out there, we give you 25 cents on the dollar, take it or leave it. People who didn't take it, they simply, they've never got anything. What about America? Could America simply default on its loans and say, sorry, we're just not going to pay our money back?
Well, it certainly could, but of course that would be an absolute domino effect on the global economy, especially because, of course, the U.S. dollar is the world reserve currency still at the moment. So that would be a huge, 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 huge effect on the global economy and probably send the global economy into utter chaos. So if someone like America did that, they would be quite different than if Argentina did it or Portugal or Spain or something like that. So I think that's something that people have to be looking at, the idea of debt jubilees and the idea of sovereign debts in themselves and whether they have any validity. But because the entire economic infrastructure of the international world is based on that idea, and of course there are billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars of bonds that are owed to Japan and China and all of these other foreign reserves that are held by foreign countries. Obviously, that would undermine the entire international system as it stands, and just as I say, create utter chaos and probably launch a few wars in and of itself if America tried to do that. So it would be. I wouldn't want to see the consequences of something like that because I think it would be utter chaos.
But, Nick, another thing to consider, and this is something I've been doing a lot of studying on recently and interviewing people, and we'll be coming up with some new information. But if you've never seen the DVD interview, the talk that Ambassador Henry Cooper gave last October on an EMP attack. And an EMP attack could totally destroy the economic infrastructure of the United States. We would not simply have the financial wherewithal to pay any of our debts, and it would really destroy the economy of the whole world. They know what needs to be done, and we absolutely refuse to do it. Both the Congress voted, both Democrats and Republicans, to actually take measures to prevent an EMP attack. This was 2 years ago, and this was blocked, never got out of the Senate. They know there's a problem. The question is, why aren't we doing something? Or is there somebody, perhaps, or some spiritual force that wants to destroy and disrupt our society? I don't know. It's a good question to ask. I think it's going to be a fascinating year. And of course, it wouldn't even have to be a country setting off a nuclear explosion. It could simply be a solar response. And certainly you could have solar storms. We're going to have our maximum solar storms this year and next year in a recurrent cycle, I don't know, 20, 30 year cycles. And we certainly, a solar storm could do almost exactly what the EMP attack could. And if that were to happen, the whole world economy would collapse literally overnight. Anything else you'd like to ask before we let you go, Nick?
No, that would do it. You bring up our politicians and several facetious comments come to mind, but no. You've answered my question. I appreciate it.
God bless. Thanks very much. And let's go to, we've got Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How are we doing?
We're doing good. How about yourself?
Doing just fine. Do you have a question or comment?
Just a comment on the overnight is with the currency, it depends on which side you're on a currency. If you're on the high side or low side, you're going to get charged interest if you hold it overnight. Or if you're on the right side, then you'll make interest off. So basically, you know, it's not a large amount of interest, but it
You're talking about the repo, okay?
Right.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you so much. Have any thoughts on that, James?
It sounds reasonable to me.
Maybe you can let us know next week. Anyway, thanks very much, Mike, and let's go to Grant calling from Spokane. Grant, do you have a question or comment?
Just a quick question on what's going on with the price of silver dropping down even into the high 20s.
It was 29.992 today, I think, something like that. But anyway, Chris, James, why is the price of silver going down? Do you have any thoughts on it?
Again, I think there's some manipulation going on. Honestly, I think that this year we're going to see a breakout in silver. But again, it's always a question of how much they can manipulate that market.
And I think he's absolutely right, Grant. I think it's all manipulated. They're manipulating the price of gold. They're manipulating the price of silver. They're manipulating the price of oil and of groceries. They're manipulating what we believe and what we think. Anything else you'd like to ask before we let you go, Grant? God bless. Okay, fine. Well, I guess then James Corbett, because he's here every Monday afternoon, as long as he'll stick with us. We enjoy having him on. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty to wrap up the program. Well, James, certainly we've got 3 minutes now to wrap up the program with your thoughts about what we should be concerned about, and I certainly agree with you. I think that the price of gold and silver are totally manipulated, and I hope you're right about that breakout in silver. How high do you think silver might go?
Difficult to say if it actually gets out of the sort of range in which they're able to manipulate it, but certainly other people have talked about getting it into, you know, 50, 100, 150, getting into that range. I mean, that would be the type of breakout that we'd be looking for if it was free from manipulation. But again, I can't really give a figure for it because, again, it just depends so much on what they're able to do behind the scenes. But on the note of gold, at any rate, there's been this sort of meme developing that there's a gold rush bubble and that there are so many people who have been flooding into gold and they're all going to be flocking out of it as gold fails to break past 1700, etc. That myth is being destroyed somewhat by some recent stats that show that, in fact, gold holdings are not really increasing. In fact, in terms of U.S. gold coin sales, they actually fell 25% in the past year. So there isn't this rush that they keep talking about that they're trying to blame the stagnating gold prices on. So again, we keep seeing the supposed reasons why these metals fail to break out being cut out from under them, but they still keep trotting out these phony excuses. At any rate, I still think gold and silver are probably the best long-term investments you can make at this point.
And I think it's so hard, you know, people get into gold and then they see the price go down and they react emotionally. And my gut feeling is that so much of this is they're playing games with our mind, with our emotions, because mankind are basically greedy. That's what they're all about. And of course, when the price is going up, they're very happy. When the price is going down, they react. And so often people will sell when they just before the price turns around. In fact, I can usually tell you when the price is going to turn around because that's just about the time I sell.
That's right. Isn't that always the way? Well, exactly right. And that's something that's important to keep in mind. I think people have to keep as much physical of gold and silver as they can, because it's less, there's more of a psychological barrier to just selling it every time the price dips. I think once you have that in your hand physically, I think there's more of an incentive to keep it there. And if people have that idea, this is a long-term investment strategy, this is something for years and years, hence perhaps you'll never have to use it in the next several years, hopefully. And if people have that attitude instead of going out of it every time the market dips, I think they'll be better off in the long run.
Well, God bless, and thanks very much for being with us, James. I look forward to Monday afternoon when we have you with us, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
Thank you. Talk to you next week.
God bless. We have